Welcome to episode 13 of the Bulak podcast. I'm Ursula Lindsay in Amman, Jordan. I'm joined, as always, by my friend and colleague, Marsha Lynx Quayle in Rabat, Morocco. And our guest today is Batul Abu Aklin, who is speaking to us from Gaza City. And you will hear some background noise when we say hello to her. Hi, Batul.
Hi.
Hi. Welcome to Bulak. We are so pleased and honored to have you as a guest. Batul is a talented young poet and translator whose debut poetry collection will be out in June. And again, we couldn't be happier than to be talking with her today, even as we continue to be heartbroken and angry and disbelieving that the genocide in Gaza lasts this long and continues, and if anything, intensifies. But thank you so much for joining us today, Batul, and I will let Marsha introduce you more fully, as Marsha has known you and your work for many years.
Thank you.
Yes, so Batul Abu Aklin, for those of you who don't know her, is a poet and translator from Gaza, Palestine. She started writing at the age of 10, and at the age of 15, she won the Virgil Poetry Prize for her poem, It Wasn't Me Who Stole the Cloud, which was published in the Beirut-based magazine Rusted Radishes and later included in the Italian anthology of Water and Time. Aklin's poetry has been translated into several languages and featured in numerous international publications, including Arabic Quarterly. Her work was recognized by the 2025 edition of the London Magazine Poetry Prize, and she was Modern Poetry and Translations 2024 Poet Translator in Residence. Her first full-length collection, 48 Kilograms, is set to appear from Tenement Press in June of this year. And I wanted to start out by reading the poem, It Wasn't Me Who Stole the Cloud, or I Didn't Steal the Cloud, because this is how I met Batul. I was one of the organizers of the Barjil Poetry Prize, and there were several categories, and one of them was writers aged 14 to 17. And you can imagine these were poems that were meant to go along with an artwork. And you can imagine that many of the poems of the 14, 15, and 16-year-olds, it was a lot to get through. We had a lot of submissions. And then suddenly this poem sort of broke upon us as a revelation. And I'm going to read from the translation of it now. I didn't steal the cloud. I'm roaming through the alleys of the refugee camp, my words echoing only across my heart laid waste. I show off my power. I'm a wave swallowing all there is around me, a whistle blasting out, not only outside, but also inside me. Exhausted, I collapse, turn into a sea spray, disappear. I'm a stormy sea. Someone stolen a cloud from Michael and placed it over my head. They thought it was me stole it. And so I came to grief. The refugee camp, like land and destiny, zinc sheets drilling through my head, the noise they make when they hug the frowning sky, the walls breathe their chill. I wrap up in the black blanket from the agency that won't warm my blue body, not even my little toe. I'm carrying my white card. I stand in line with an endless crowd. It was my lot to be half asleep, so hey, take it easy. 2 hours, I get 2 bags of flour, lentils, chickpeas, oil, tinned food, sugar, elation. Then hysterical weeping, kneading loaves to fill my little sparrows' bellies. My heart's kneaded in, it's left in the dough. I wear the clothes of those who live in their own land, refugee written on my forehead. I sink in mud with strawberries for sale. I kiss my kids by the stinking gas lamp. They carry backpacks stamped UNICEF in the large letters of pity. They wear blue shirts. The fabric sets on fire their bodies that are the color of wheat in summer. They carry in their backpacks one of my love-needed loaves. They toss it aside, complain, make believe they were tucking into a falafel wrap with pickles, like the one in the hand of that spoiled boy, Salim. Their mouths are watering. It was my lot to be a refugee in the regions of a homeland I don't know. I didn't steal the cloud, Michael. Take me back home.
Thank you, Marcia, for this wonderful reading.
Thank you so much, Batu, for being with us. So if you could start out just telling us about your origins as a poet, how you came to writing this beautiful poem at 15 that came to us, me and Henshafani and Zina Hashembek, as we were reading for this prize.
Absolutely. As you know, this poem was written for Parjil Poetry Prize, and it was inspired from a painting by Ingi Aplaton. I was just trying to talk about Al-Nakba and what happened after that and how refugees were living. And during that time, I really didn't understand why people like this poem so much, why they admire it so much. I remember when I read it to my grandma, who was killed during this genocide, she cried. And I didn't also understand when I was 15 why it just makes people so emotional when they read it. But nowadays, like the more I grow up, the more this poem grows with me, and the more I understand why people see it in that way. I mean, I was 15 and talking about a mother and her children. It's like when I read it nowadays, I feel so proud. Like how a 15 years old girl wrote this poem. And I lived what in this poem. I'm living that nowadays, and I've been experiencing it. And I lived in a camp, and I know how much it's so miserable and one of the worst things in the world that I don't wish anyone to experience. But I don't know, it's like this poem shows how Palestine before the genocide and during it and maybe after it is just facing the same thing. We've been living the same thing for ages. I think this is what makes this poem powerful, that every Palestinian one can relate to what is written in this poem.
Yeah, there are the zinc sheets. The sound and image of them is something I'm not going to forget. And also the way that you have these bits of color in your poem, which is very appropriate for a poem that is written about a painting. And you do paint a picture so vividly of this mother who is trying to take care of her children and to give them something under these circumstances. For you, when you write poems, do they start with a line or with an image or with an emotion? Can you talk a bit about what is the initial spark for poems for you?
It depends, actually. Sometimes it's just a line. I write it. I have like 3 docs files. Each one of them is for something. I consider them as the thoughts of my muse. But there is something in the Arab poets' origins that says in the past, they used to believe that each poet has a devil. And this devil just tell him or her what to write. And I guess I like that. And I created 3 docs files. One of them I put just the draft poems, which like they have some kind of body and shape. And another one just for sentences, and the third one for English poems, because recently I've been writing in English. So it depends. Sometimes the whole poem gets out of my body at once, and I don't even need to edit anything in it. And this is the most wonderful thing, but it's we can say it doesn't happen all the time. I mean, this, if I will wait this sound, it will come only once a year, once a month, if I'm so lucky. But sometimes I have just to sit and to try to write. And I tried that. At the beginning, I used to believe that, no, I won't do that. I won't sit and hold the pen and say, I will write a poem now. But sometimes I got surprised because the outcome is unexpected. So sometimes it's a good idea just to try, to sit and hold the pen and try to write something. And sometimes it's just, as I said, I write the ideas. And after that, when I have some time to sit and to try to write, I open this Google Docs file and I go through the ideas and pick one and develop it to become a poem. And this is one of the most helpful things, to have some kind of file just to write ideas.
And can you tell us a bit about what it's been like to write under the conditions that you've been on, how you've managed to write in the last year and a half? And I think that's hard for a lot of people to imagine, like how you've made the space, literally the physical space and the mental space and the emotional space to write.
Good question. Actually, at the beginning of the genocide, like for the past 5 months, I guess, I didn't write not even a poem. I just wrote a short story, and I published it after a while. But during that time, I was thinking why to write. I refused totally to write, and I considered it as some kind of action that I can't bear, just to talk about everything. And I lost hope that poetry can do anything. And I do still sometimes, and maybe now I don't have that kind of hope and believe that poetry can change anything, or not even a bit. But during that time, I just didn't write. But there was a neighbor of us who was also evacuated, but she was from Khan Yunis. So she told me, Basul, you have so much things to say and you have the talent, so why don't you write? I said, maybe I can try. I wrote and wrote and wrote many poems, but also refused to publish any of them. And I stayed like that for also a pretty good period. But then she told me, if you didn't publish any of your writing, I won't talk to you again. And I do really like, he's a friend. And by the way, if she didn't do that, I think I wasn't going to publish anything. Yes, it is. Still, well, sometimes sometimes we just need that kind of push, someone to tell you, if you didn't do that, I won't talk to you. So it just like that.
Okay, well, now I know I'm very grateful to this neighbor and, of course, to Eva.
Yes. Oh, my God, Eva, I really miss her. She's, I remember when I was just a little girl, 9 years, and when I came to her with my first poem, it was about the sea. I still remember, like, about what it was. And I went there and she read that poem and she said, you're going to be something in the future. Just from some couple of lines, she knew that I'll be something and that I'll do something and that I'll continue in that journey of writing and becoming a poet and who I am today. So I kept just going. And, you know, I was a little kid, so sometimes I didn't go or my parents were busy, but she kept just calling. She kept calling all the time and telling them that your daughter has something. She's not like other kids
for our listeners, sorry, you guys both know Heba, but can you tell them who she is?
Absolutely. Hebal Agha, she was my instructor. She is the first one who taught me how to see the world in a more poetic way, or let's say that she opened my vision. She works at Al-Qattan, Abd al-Muhsin Al-Qattan and his statue. And like she's, we have in Al-Qattan, a literary club. During that time, it was called Nadi Al-Adab. So I joined that club and she helped me and a lot of poets to become who they are and to express themselves and to discover that world of poetry and writing in general.
Mm. And Heba is also a poet herself, although she hasn't published a collection of her own work, but instead has focused her energy. She's published some poems. You can find some of her work. We'll share some of her work in the show notes, but she has focused her energy on mentoring younger poets.
Or let's say in other words, she focused on preparing an army of writers and poets.
Yeah. And now you have a poetry collection that is going to come out next month in a bilingual edition, and its title is 48 Kilos?
Yes.
Sorry, could you talk a bit about the title and what that title means?
Yes. During that time when I was collecting the poems to have this poetry collection, there was like three titles before this one. Until one day, something happened. It was like the first time for me to hear something like that, and I think like the whole world, it was the first time for them to hear such a horrible thing. During that time there was no coffins, so they started to collect the shredded flesh in plastic bags. And I was thinking, like, what if that happened to me and my flesh got mixed with others, or even there was some missing flesh and they couldn't find it. Who will collect my flesh? Or if the whole city was just, everyone was killed, so who will do that? So these poems, 48 kilograms, I'm just collecting myself in case there was no one to do that.
So you start with 48 and you work downwards, 47, 46, as the collection goes along. Can you talk? I know you were, you know, of course, thinking about which poem goes first, but can you talk about how you decided the order of the collection?
I think it was more like depending on the way As you read the poetry collection, it was mostly about death, and I was trying to understand this weird thing, to understand my relationship with it, and maybe to make peace with just death itself. So the poetry collection order is from the beginning of this journey until the end of it. Well, it didn't end, but at least until I felt that it's completed for me, that I kind of understand this mysterious thing.
It was very, I sort of had a guess as to what the meaning of the title was. And you also say something in your introduction that gestures to that. But it is a kind of dreadful countdown. Those numbers, it really did. It's an inconceivable thing to have to think about. And then it was, I also thought about sort of people dwindling, and it's a very powerful and very sad structure that you've chosen, and of course also like a very powerful way of what you say in introduction, that you are going to gather yourself and put all the pieces of yourself there in the collection.
Maybe now you could read Miled for us.
Yes. I'll start with the Arabic one, the original actually, and then Marsha will read the translation.
All right.
Milad. الموت يقترب. لست خائفة. أترقبه ترقب الأم لمولودها. سأصرخ كثيرا. سأشعر برأسه وهو يخرج أمامي طازجا يقطر منه الدم. سيصرخ هو ويخمد صوتي. سأعانقه وأمرر أصابعي على رأسه الصغير. سيخبرني الممرضون أني ولدت الموتى. سأهلع. سأقبل طفلي وأعانقه إلى أن يختنق. قتلت الموتى. قتلت ميلادي.
ميلاد. Birth. Death is coming closer. I'm not scared. I'm waiting like a mother expecting her newborn. I will scream. I will feel his head coming out of my body, in front of my eyes, fresh blood trickling from it. It will wail. My voice will be stifled. I will hold it and run my fingers over its little head. He's still wailing. The nurse will tell me I gave birth to death. I will panic. I will kiss my baby. I will hug him and crush the breath out of him. I will cry. I will weep as he grows silent. I killed death. I killed my baby.
There are almost too many poems in this collection that I wanted to hear read in this episode, but this was particularly one of them. And I think, like a lot of good poems, I am still turning it around in my head. There is a sort of mystery to it that I find to the images that it's producing. But I think the thing that I come back to is the feeling that I had about all of your poetry, Batul, which is that there is so much life in it in the midst of death. And that's the only way I can put it. But that's what I felt with this poem.
It's like giving birth to death. It's so, the connection between life and death. Actually, I haven't noticed that before. But as you're talking, I discovered that, yes, we start to, like, most of my poems are talking about life and death at the same time, which is,
yes,
unbelievable.
Yes. I mean, it's grotesque to be living under the shadow of this death. And then it is beautiful to be affirming how much life and love there is in the shadow of this death. And like I said, I'm not sure, it's hard for me to talk about everything that these poems do, but for me that was very much part of it. And then also how much you understandably write about, like, in a very beautiful but also in a very visceral way about the body and what people's bodies are being put through.
I guess I'm trying to say in most of the poems in this poetry collection, I'm trying to show, as you said, how the life looks like in the shadow of death. And this poem is one of them. Like, people, women are delivering babies, even in such conditions. So it's like they're delivering babies who might be killed at the same time. So here I'm just trying to kill the death itself and just to sacrifice with my own baby. Actually, this poem has has a story, a little story, the title actually. And this is why I choose the title to be not only Beth, the translation, but also Milad. Milad is the name, a male name. And I'm a person who prefer always handwriting. And I end up to just write everything on the phone or on the laptop. So it's really annoying, but I love the feeling of writing on paper. So,
me too.
When the genocide started, after a couple of months, during January 2024, I got the first notebook. Like, I evacuated from my house with only one notebook, and I write a lot. I write my diaries, sometimes some ideas, poems sometimes, anything comes in my head. So I was in Rapov, and I found the library, a bookshop in Tala Sultan. And I found a really wonderful, beautiful notebook. I named all my notebooks. Each one has a name. So this was called Milad. So this poem has the name of that notebook, which is also weird that the name of the son of the person who let us stay in his land was called also Milan. So it was like death all around me, but also there is some kind of birth and life and Milad also. So this notebook just means a lot to me. So this poem is called Milad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny now rereading it as you say this, when I see the line and run my fingers over its little head, you know, of course, it's such a tender moment, but I can also imagine you running your fingers over your notebook, which is also a kind of baby as well.
Yes, I think so. I mean, it's been like it was such an experience to start writing, to get back to writing on those pages. So, I mean, this was the first notebook I wrote anything, and during the whole genocide. So it has a really special place in my heart.
I also wonder if you could talk about how your translation fits and your work in translation and translating other poets, and how that relates to your craft of poetry. How you see how translation fits in your life as a writer.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. I've been recently involved during the world of translation. Not like writing, like I've been writing for almost 10 years, but for translation, it's quite new for me. And new whole thing, which I really like. I started with my journey in translation with the co-translating two poems and publishing them. And Salam to Gaza, one of the MBTs, Modern Poetry in Translation Issues, co-translated by me and Christina Vitti. She was the one who encouraged me to start translating. It's always, I guess it's always about having that kind of person who push you and tell you just, you can do it. So you won't lose anything if you tried. And I tried and I liked that. And people also liked that. So I kept to translating since that time. And I became the poet in residence with the MBT. It was working also on a digital pamphlet, which I guess it's going to be published during this year also. It contains 10 poems written by Ghazan writers. Mostly those poets started publishing during the genocide, and most of them are not known that much, which was my mission from the beginning. I want just to let the world know some poets, some great, wonderful poets who just didn't get the chance. So I decided to give them a hand and to help that. As when I started my journey in the world of poetry, it was Parjil Poetry Prize. So it just opened a lot of doors for me. So I'm trying in this residency just to give others this opportunity. It's going to be a digital pamphlet. So I worked with those poets on editing the poems, the original ones, the Arabic version. And it was such a really wonderful process to work on editing others' poems. So it took us a couple of months to get them done. As you know, like sometimes things happen with them. So we kept just commenting on the file until we got the version, the satisfying one. And then I started translating those poems. And we're now in the last stage, so we'll be just a quick, small edits on the translation, and it will be ready, hopefully. And moving on,
I can't wait.
Yes, me too. I can't wait to share those poems and to introduce the world to those wonderful poets, so it will be great. I hope so. A chance for all of them, as Barjil was a chance for me. And during also that time, I was working on my poetry collection. At the beginning, I thought about publishing it only in Arabic. It wasn't my first idea to publish a bilingual edition. Then I feel always, I feel myself living between the two languages, between Arabic and English, which is quite annoying sometimes. Nowadays I feel like I don't belong to any of them. It's like living, for example, I'm from Gaza, so it feels like living outside Gaza. So you don't now belong to Gaza, and you don't belong to the place where you are. So it feels like that for me when it comes to Arabic and English. So I have many friends who don't speak Arabic, and I really wanted them to read these poems, including Christina Vitti. She's a really wonderful person. And I wanted her to read this poem. So I said, you know what? Maybe I can try that. Just to self-translate those poems. And in this way, I'll find also there will be more people who will get the chance to read it and to see what I experienced and how actually the life looks like here. So we found tenement address, and I emailed them, and it all worked, and they were so wonderful, and they helped with so much with getting this poetry collection as I wanted to be. So self-translation was something, it was a whole different journey. From writing and even from translating others' poems. It was like I'm trying to translate myself again. For me, translation is not only about translating between languages, but also translating the emotions to words. This is part of the translation process. So it was like translating again. And in this way, seeing my poems in another language, it helped me to not to be so emotionally connected with them. Now I see them in the eyes of an editor and a translator, not only the writer, not only such that emotional way. So it helped me so much with editing the original ones even. I could see where I need to change and how to develop the poem. So it was a really interesting journey for me.
So I just wanted to ask you about these the translation workshops coming up in June. How you what the role you feel translation plays generally, and why you wanted to have these translation workshops for young emerging translators, not necessarily young, but emerging translators in Gaza now.
Well, thank you so much, Marsha, for mentioning that. As you know, nowadays, universities are almost online. And it's not online in the way that the whole world expected to be. Actually, it's more miserable than online. So it's almost like self-studying, self-learning. You teach yourself almost everything. We have this lectures that were recorded during the quarantine. So they upload them to us, and you just watch the lectures. And most of the time, we can't get in touch with the professors. They might be, you know, the life is hard here. So everyone is kind of busy with their things.
Well, and we should mention, in case anybody doesn't know, that every university in Gaza has been bombed and physically destroyed. And this is a big part of the reason why, and people are not meeting in person, and you know, and many students and many professors have been either killed or forced to leave, or you know, are unable to gather. Sorry, I just want to make clear that in case anybody doesn't know.
Thank you for mentioning that. So yes, as you said, also some of them were killed, and most of us. Our houses were bombed, so most of us also don't have that luxury of going every day and paying a lot of money to get internet connection and to join the lectures online. So it's almost like self-studying. You learn yourself everything and you get the exam. It's almost like that. And I'm a person who really loves gaining knowledge and learning about things. And I'm obsessed with poetry and the translation and all these things. And I know that there are many peoples like me. Even during the normal days, you can find workshops and even clubs for writing in English or Arabic for artists. Singing and all these things, but it's almost, I think there is no that kind of translation community. So I always felt I would like to have a community of the translators where we can discuss our ideas and thoughts and to have some kind of more professional training. I know that a lot will like to have that. So I was talking about that with Marsha. It was for me a dream, to be honest. So thank you, Marsha, for making that dream real. And I guess a lot will be happy with this opportunity. So it'll be actually, as far as I remember, it will be a 4 weeks workshop. Each week will, and each week there will be 2 sessions. Each one of them is 4 hours, and it will be mainly for translators who are now in Gaza. So in this way, we'll be building a community of the translators here, and I guess when you teach some people, those people will also help others and spread knowledge. So the 60 who will be part of this workshop, they will also help the friends after that. And they will also translate writers who are from here. I think it's important because, you know, the conditions here are very hard. It's like a nightmare, and I don't think that the world outside can understand really how it feels like. Even if you can understand, it's not like living in it. So I feel when there are translators from here, they will be able more and in a more appropriate and much better way to translate those writers and poets from here, to translate that pain they write.
So Betul, we wanted to finish off, and we're so incredibly grateful for your time and for you making a space in your day for this. We wanted to finish off with the poem Lake of Questions. And so I wondered if you could talk a little, before you read the poem for us, I wondered if you could talk a little bit about that poem.
This poem, the first couple of lines and the Lake of the Questions were written when I was still in Gaza. I wrote the first, maybe you can say 4 or 5 lines, when the family still didn't decide to leave, to be evacuated to the south or not. And I'm not sure if you know that, but the starvation in Gaza started like way much long time ago before it started in the south. So we stayed in the north till, as far as I remember, half of November 2023. And there was an invasion, so we had to leave. So this poem was written during that period when I was almost getting crazy and losing my mind. I was terrified during that time. I didn't know what's going on and what will happen. And, you know, everything was collapsing around me and there was no electricity, no water, no food, nothing. Just me sitting. And I'm from those people who, when they get sad so much, I just feel that I can't move from my place. I just stay in the bed. I lose my ability of moving or doing anything at all. I think this is one of the problems that I'm facing as a poet, that I feel so much of everything around me. So when I'm happy, I'm happy so much. When I'm sad, I'm sad so much. But I'm also grateful for that. So this poem was about questions. Questions I had in my head, and I couldn't find answers for those questions. I'll read it. First in Arabic. بحيرة الأسئلة كومات الشعر المهترئة تنوح بجانب المرحاض عيدان الخشب تكمل مهمتها بالمسير وجهي يخسر شيئا من خلاياه عظامي تنقبض فمي يصبح ضيقا للغاية أسئلتي تتسع تصبح بحيرة أضل عن شواطئ جدواها حين عزم الجوع أن يرميني إلى حضن الموت مددت يدي إلى قاع البحيرة لم أجد سوى أجوبة جائعة أكثر مني التهمت أطراف أصابعي سال دمي كله شرب جسدي البحيرة ماتت الأجوبة وبقيت أنا في المنتصف مثقلة ببحيرة من الأسئلة. Like of questions, heaps of hacked of hair weep beside the toilet. Wooden sticks continue their mission of walking. My face loses some of its cells. My bones contract. My mouth narrows to the extreme, and my questions expand. They become a lake. I'm lost from its solid shores. When hunger decided to throw me into death's embrace, I stretched out my head to the lake's floor. I found nothing there, but answers more ravenous than me. These answers ate the tips of my fingers. My blood flows out. My body drains the lake. The answers perish. I was stuck alone in the middle of this expanse, a lake heaving with the questions.
Subscribe to Bulak wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Bulak Books and Instagram at Bulak.books for news and updates. Please rate or review us, and if you'd like to support us, you can make a donation on our page on DonorBox. Bulak is produced in collaboration with the podcast platform SOUT, S-O-W-T, which produces many other excellent shows in Arabic on music, literature, media, and more. For all things related to Arabic literature and translation, you should visit ArabLit.org, where you can also subscribe to the ArabLit Quarterly. If you are interested in advertising on Bulak or sponsoring episodes, contact us at bulak@sout.com. All the links and addresses mentioned here are in the show notes.